Welcome to Ministries That Podcast, where I talk to successful ministry leaders about how they're using podcasting to amplify their mission and grow their ministry so you can too. I'm Tim Hall, your host and owner of Sonomorphic, a podcast production company that specializes in podcasting for ministries. My guest today is Jason Romano. He's the director of media for Sports Spectrum and the host of Sports Spectrum Podcast. In today's episode, Jason and I are going to talk about his leap of faith from a nearly 17-year career with ESPN to pursuing sports ministry, how their magazine, website, and podcast work together in their content strategy, and then what it takes to book a dozen or more interviews each month. So let's jump right in. Here's my conversation with Jason Romano. Well, Jason, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having me. It's so fun to be here.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly where I first heard about the Sports Spectrum podcast, but I remember it being a few years back and being like, oh, this is a great idea. That, you know, you always hear about the intersection between sport and Christianity and how faith is part of that whole process and, you know, interviews with folks after big wins in sports events. And it's like, okay, this is a great idea to hear these conversations and hear that all from somebody that used to be at ESPN and get to produce this type of content. So, and I also saw just recently that you crossed the 7-year mark with the podcast, which is remarkable. I mean, there's so many podcasts out there that have barely made it to 7 episodes. So well done.
That is true too. Well, thank you. It's funny because when I was crafting the tweet, if you will, the post, it kind of blew my mind because it was Easter on that day and I was at my family's place of residence, my in-laws with my wife. And it just dawned on me because I looked on Time Hop, that app that tells you like what you posted on each day.
Yeah.
And I was looking through it and just scrolling through it. And it said 7 years ago, you know, Sports Spectrum podcast launch. And I remember that day and just thinking, oh my gosh, is anybody even going to listen? But the fact that it's 7 years old is kind of nuts to me. I mean, you're right. Most podcasts don't last that long. Or if they do, there's a bunch of different changes to it, maybe even a name change, a host change, if I'm being honest. And I've been a part of it now 7 years. I love it. It's the coolest job I think I've ever had in terms of what I get to do. And yeah, I'm grateful.
Yeah. And in that time, I saw that you have also had 5 million downloads, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And as I just mentioned, you actually started at ESPN and you were there for nearly 17 years as an Emmy award-winning producer and senior manager. And then you took the position at Sports Spectrum as the director of media. So I'd love to hear some of your story and take us back to the time where you were at ESPN. What were some of your roles during your time there?
So I was primarily a producer, and that's kind of a generic word. And I'll explain, you know, kind of the different producer roles I had. But I was a producer. I was behind the scenes. I was not on air. I was not, you know, a guy with the headphones and a microphone, you know, hosting shows or, you know, hosting SportsCenter or anything like that. Certainly that was maybe the dream job when I was 15. But when you get to ESPN, you know, you take what you can get. And I think I understood that my talents during those years, and I still think that's a talent I have now, was producing and kind of understanding content, understanding news judgment, and ultimately finding the right people to have conversations with. And so when I got there, I had just come off of working 3 years in local radio. So when I got out of college many years ago, 1997, I graduated, I was looking to get into radio. And I wanted to, in essence, do what I'm doing now, which was be a sports talk show host and interview athletes. So it's kind of funny how God works when you fast forward so many years and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But when I got out of college, you know, that opportunity didn't present itself, but there were many opportunities, well, a few at least, that allowed me to be a producer, a behind the scenes guy. And I worked in local radio for 3 years as a radio producer, producing a morning talk show and an afternoon talk show, and even DJing a little bit and working on FM radio. But really producing was where I was getting my experience, where I got my first job, and I loved it. Ultimately, I wanted to work in sports, didn't know if that would ever happen. And then I got the job at ESPN. And when I got there, I just continued that radio job, I guess, assignment. Mm. And I was working as a national, you know, radio producer on a show called Game Night. I actually started on a show called Mike and Mike in the Morning at ESPN Radio. And I was on that show for about 7 months. This is almost 24 years ago now. It's crazy. And I was a producer. I was mostly booking guests for their show, But I was, in essence, a producer. That was my title, radio producer. And then I got my own show, which was the evening show called Game Night on ESPN Radio, where for 2 years I was a radio producer, kind of directing the ship, sitting in the chair, working with the hosts, organizing show content every day, and reacting to games, thus the name Game Night. And then I moved to the TV side in 2003, 3 years in. And that's where I spent 9 years on the television side. So I was a talent booker, talent producer, and again, the producer title, but I was really booking guests. That was my primary role. And I did that for 9 years. I also was a TV producer, show producer for a few shows on a show called Outside the Lines, where I sat in the chair and I directed the show and ran the show and produced probably did about 50 of those shows with Outside the Lines. But ultimately, I was a talent producer. I was a show producer in terms of booking guests. And about 9 years later, I got an opportunity to enter this new thing called social media. And I was a social media producer for the next 4 to 5 years. In essence, I was doing the same thing. It was just for a different platform. And, you know, you're creating content, you're curating content, and you're looking at opportunities to promote what's happening in sports and ultimately promote the brand of what ESPN was and still is. So I did that, and that was my 17 years, mostly as a producer, a couple opportunities to do a few other things, very small things. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'm so grateful just to have work there for sure.
Yeah, so after 17 years, you took a leap of faith and decided to pursue sports ministry. So I'd love to hear what was going through your mind at that time. What led to that decision?
Yeah, this was something I didn't become a Christian or really begin a walk with Jesus until my second year at ESPN.
Okay.
I was 27 years old, and you know, I grew up occasionally going to church and basically going because my grandfather wanted me to go, and I did all the right, you know, catechisms that you're supposed to do and as a good Catholic boy, but I really had no idea about Jesus or a relationship with him or God as Father and salvation and all those things. It just didn't concern me. All I really wanted to do was, you know, be in the good graces of my grandfather and my mom, and then ultimately pursue a career in broadcasting. And that's what I did. So I didn't really care about God or think about him. It wasn't top of mind at all. And I didn't have anybody to kind of show me until my little brother, Chris, became a follower of Jesus. And then I watched him for a few years walk this life of faith, and it became attractive to me. Mother's Day 2001, he invited me to church and then ultimately asked me if I wanted to start a relationship with Jesus myself, and I said yes, and that started the journey, but now I'm still a producer at ESPN, right? Mm. And so I go back to work, and for many years, even after I said yes to start this relationship with God, I still had God on the back burner, and there's no doubt that my job with ESPN was the God of my life, probably even over my relationship with my wife, my daughter. I mean, I was putting ESPN first in almost everything. And there's nothing wrong with that from a worldly perspective. Like, people commend that and say, hey, you're doing your job and you're good at it and you work hard and you're reliable and dependable and all those things that they put in those yearly reviews. But, you know, as I started growing as a follower of Christ, I started to kind of enter into this interesting tension of wanting to continue to pursue this job that I love so much, but also understanding that Jesus was becoming a pretty big priority in my life, an important priority. And what do I do with that? And ultimately, about 10 years in, I started to discover that my priorities were backwards. I would have told you I was an ESPN producer who happened to be a Christian or who happened to be a husband or a dad. And I started to realize that I was a follower of Christ first, who happened to be an ESPN producer or who happened to be a husband and a dad and, you know, anything else I am or wherever I'm going. And so understanding Christ as Lord means that. And ultimately, I still didn't think that was going to have me leaving ESPN. I just thought that now I saw my job at ESPN a little differently. Mm-hmm. And I could go in with a mindset to love and serve people and to kind of be a representative for Christ in the workplace. But that's where things started to get a little interesting for me, because it was about 2014, 2015, and I went to a conference, a very small gathering in Nashville, Tennessee, with a bunch of Christian social media producers who were working in ministry or Christian nonprofits or churches. And I was the only one there who worked at a secular organization, ESPN. Mm-hmm. And as a follower of Christ, I was really intrigued by the invite. It was one of the first small conferences that I was ever invited to speak. And I was honored. And I went, and this gathering was amazing. And I just sat there. After I spoke, I was one of the first, and I kind of shared about my story. And then I'm just watching all of these people do their jobs, which is basically the same job that I'm doing, but for a greater purpose. And I become really intrigued. Like, I'm not looking to leave ESPN yet, but I'm like, I wonder if God would someday have me do that. Yeah. Like, take all the skills, the talents, whatever you want to call them, experience of working at ESPN and somehow translate that into ministry. Could that ever happen? And ultimately, I didn't think it could. I just thought, okay, well, I'll be a Christian who loves the Lord and works at ESPN. No problem with that. I know many of people who are there who are followers of Christ, and those people love their jobs and are able to kind of do that. But I kept feeling this push, and I didn't know what it was. But ultimately, I figured out that it was the Holy Spirit saying, listen, I want you to do more for me. And ultimately, that led to leaving ESPN. Now, that didn't happen until 2 years after this conference. In 2015, I visited this conference and met a few people. And then in 2016, which was my last full year at ESPN, I was working yet again on Mike and Mike in the Morning. I had kind of come full circle here and bookended my career working on this very popular morning show as a social media producer and director. And that was the year where I really started to press into what God wanted. And during the afternoon, see, I would go to work really early, Tim, like 4 a.m. I'd come home around noon, show would end at 10. I'd go home around noon or 1 o'clock. And I had the afternoon all free. Sometimes I'd try to get a nap in because, oh my gosh, those naps were precious in my life. I'll tell you that much, being tired all day. But I would go for walks a lot, especially during the spring and summer. I'd go out, I'd go for a walk, and I would try at least once or twice a week to schedule time with someone for a phone call while I was on this walk. And I would just talk to them. And these were not people who worked at ESPN. These were pastors, these were speakers, authors, people of faith who were outside of the realm of ESPN. And all I wanted to do was pick their brain a little bit, which I hate saying that word now because it's become so cliche, but I was doing that. And I wasn't looking for a job, but I was just looking for clarity a little bit because I would tell them, hey, I think God is pulling me away from ESPN. Am I crazy? And then it was, you know, hopefully they'd say, yeah, you're crazy. Just go back to work. But all of them said, no, you're not crazy. You just got to be mindful of where he's pulling you towards. And God gives us wisdom for a reason. And in all of those conversations, nothing was leading to any kind of specific job. I'll tell you what it did lead to. It led to two things. One of the conversations I had was with an author who ultimately became my co-author in helping me write 2 books post-ESPN. So that was one thing that happened. Yeah. But the second thing was I met my boss in one of those conversations on social media, and we ended up getting on the phone. And my current boss, Steve Stenstrom, was one of those people who I picked the brains of back in 2015. And ultimately, he becomes the president of Sports Spectrum, calls me up and says, I think I might have an idea here that God might be steering you towards. And it was sports and faith. And through that, and I know this is a long story, so forgive me, but through that conversation, we met multiple times before there was any offer on the table or anything. And finally, he said, yeah, I think I got an opportunity for you to, you know, be a part of Sports Spectrum to help rebuild this brand up and ultimately to help, you know, start a podcast and even host it. And I was very excited about it, but a little scared because I'd not hosted anything since college. But this is where I thought the Lord was leading me. Now, here's why it doesn't make any sense, Tim. They were offering me a 40% pay cut, and they were offering me a 1-year contract, which meant that's all they could guarantee. And they were offering me no benefits and just a contract position with no guarantees. But they really saw something, and I saw something in them too, to believe that this is where God was steering me. It took a lot of prayer and convincing of my wife to say yes to this. You call it a leap of faith early on. That's exactly what it was because I didn't know where this was going to go. But here's what I knew. I knew if God was calling me away from ESPN into this contract position that he was going to make a way. And if it was Jason calling Jason into this position, that was going to blow up in my face. And I thought it would be pretty clear which direction to go and continue to follow as long as the Lord was leading. And it's been 7 years now. Yeah. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So for those that aren't familiar with Sports Spectrum, share with us a little bit about that organization and what y'all do.
Yeah, it's a sports and faith media ministry. That's what I call it. Yeah. It's sports ministry. It's media, but it's also, you know, just, I don't know. To me, I look at it like I looked at ESPN. It's a media company. Mm-hmm. We just tell stories that are a little different in the sports world. Yeah. Sports Spectrum has been around since 1985, a long time. We're entering almost 40 years here with this ministry. So I stand on the shoulders of many people before me who worked on this brand and worked on this ministry to, in essence, keep Jesus in the sports conversation. Tell the stories of athletes and coaches and other people in the world of sports who love the Lord. And the ministry has changed a little bit over the years. It was a magazine first. It's still a magazine today, but then it went into a radio show. It started to enter the digital age in the 2000s with website content. And when we came along, we were the first to launch a Sports Spectrum podcast 7 years ago, like you mentioned. And that kind of took it into a different direction because now we were gathering this content that we didn't have previously. But the podcast interviews are really just content and conversations that can be used on all platforms. Yeah. So whenever we do a podcast interview with an athlete, quite often those turn into magazine stories, website stories, content on social media, repurposed content for future opportunities. It's just all over the place. But the podcast is kind of the first line of defense for any of those conversations that we have. And so, yeah, I've been a part of building that up, but even rebuilding up our website. Our magazine, like I said, continues to be strong and going forward here in 2024. You know, our social medias have grown exponentially, especially in the last 3 or 4 years with some new hires that we've had. And, you know, our Instagram, which was our lowest followed platform 3 years ago, is now our most followed platform, which is really fascinating to see.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. You know, I don't know where we're going. I still believe the ceiling's way up there and we have a lot of room to grow, but God has done an incredible work through this ministry and given me the most purposeful work that I've ever done. There's no doubt.
So I was reading in your bio that you started the podcast 1 month after you started at Sports Spectrum. And,
it's true.
And so for those of us that have already started a podcast, we know how much work goes into just getting it started. And so I'd love to hear what went into it. How did you get it off the ground so fast?
I love this question because nobody really knows the intricacies or the behind the scenes of what takes place. They just see the podcast on March 31st, 2017 and say, congratulations, way to go. But I will say this, when I knew that I was leaving ESPN, it was probably in early January of that year. I was still working at ESPN and I continued to work and do the best job I could. I didn't want to slack off right at the very end and just say, forget you guys. My last day at ESPN was February 10th. So you can do the math here. February 10th, last day at ESPN. February 15th, first day at Sports Spectrum. March 31st, podcast launches. So in January, here's what I went into this podcast knowing when they told me to launch it. I know how to edit audio. I've been doing that for years. That was one of the duties that I had when I worked in local and national radio. So I never forgot how to edit audio. I knew how to conduct a conversation, at least I thought I did, because I'd done a lot of pre-interviews and known tons of athletes and had relationships with them. What I didn't know was, how does a podcast get to Apple on your phone, and how do you listen to it that way? Like, how does that happen? Where do you edit? How can you edit? How do you even record the interview, right? Like, I didn't know how to connect a phone or some sort of source into the laptop to get the interview accomplished.
Yeah,
they didn't have the things that they have today back in 2017. Everything is easily done for, I mean, this platform that we're recording on did not exist in 2017. And I'm so glad that they do exist now because it's made my life a lot easier. But in 2017, I had to go to YouTube. That's what I did.
Yeah.
And watch a lot of tutorials. And I started the idea of editing probably in that January form. And I used GarageBand on my MacBook. And, you know, today I still use GarageBand to edit. Now, I've graduated into some other areas of editing, but GarageBand's still a go-to. And I still think it does a good job with what you're looking to do when you're just editing audio. So I use GarageBand. We do a lot more video now, thanks to Riverside and some other platforms, which is a really big game changer for Sports Spectrum. But back then, I used GarageBand. I downloaded some recorder app thing on my computer. I don't even remember what it was called, to try and record interviews. And I would ask people to call me or me to call them on FaceTime audio. instead of just the phone.
Yeah.
So if you do FaceTime on your phone, you can just do the audio and it actually sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good quality. So if you go back and listen to any of the old interviews that we did, the first couple, maybe 20 or so, at least 10 to 15 of those were recorded on FaceTime audio. And I didn't even really have a good mic. I had a Blue Yeti, which was just giant mic. I was trying to figure out the audio inputs. There were so many things, Tim, that I was trying to learn. And you just trial and error, right? Mm-hmm. Like I just needed to be comfortable. And then how do you get it to Apple? You know, Anchor and Spotify podcasts and what exists today. And these things didn't really exist back then. There was one platform that I know of that was in existence back then called Libsyn, which is still around. Mm-hmm. And we've used Libsyn for many years. And Libsyn allowed us to have our podcast, you know, then sent out. They're basically the tree. And then the branches off that get it to Apple and Spotify and Google Play and Stitcher and all these old podcast places to listen. It was really interesting. And by the way, once you record the interview and you figure out how to get it to the app, that's where the hard part starts to me, because who's listening?
Yeah.
How do you get it out there? How do you even get one person to click play and find your show? And that's not my sweet spot, marketing and promotion. Mm. But I had to go and do that. And I just called up all my friends and reached out to all the people I knew on social media. And I said, would you please post about this and share this with your audience? And that's how we started growing it from the early days.
Yeah. So while you're talking about that, what have you found over the past 7 years as the best way to grow the audience and reach more people?
Yeah, this is interesting because I think there's so many more podcasts today than there were in 2017. There's also a lot of podcasts that were in 2017 that aren't even remotely in existence anymore, which is really interesting to think, you know, when you last 7 years in podcasting world, it's like lasting 30 years, you know, on television or something, you know, one of those like The Simpsons that are just the longest running TV show ever. And you feel like, all right, 7 years is an eternity in podcasting. So longevity helps, certainly. You know, over the years, you know, you interview so many people. I think we've had like 1,400 interviews, not 1,400 people, but 1,400 interviews. So it's probably somewhere around 1,000 people that we've interviewed. And that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I remember initially in 2017, and a lot of the beats that we practiced back then still are in existence today. Mm. Social media is, to me, the one place that you have to be on to get an audience. Now, there is the word of mouth side of things where, you know, people tell people tell people. Mm-hmm. But social media right now, I feel like, is really the only way, or the best way, I should say, to get your audience to know about what you're doing, to let them know you had this guest on. And then to ask favors. You know, I don't ask a ton of favors too often. I like to say I only deposit and then cash in that money every so often. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to make a lot more deposits than I do withdrawals from people. But I did on that day. And the only other time I've really done it was when my book came out. Both of my books came out. Was I would go to people and I say, listen, can I have a favor? Would you be willing to share this on your social media page? I'll even write you the content script if you want. Yeah. And I did that with like 200 people initially. And that's what got the ball rolling. And we were hoping for, well, I think it was like 10,000 downloads for the first year. And we ended up with like 100,000, which felt good. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent today. Great. But it felt like that was a good number to strive and attain for. And I remember when we hit our first million downloads and I was like, are you kidding me? Like there's that many people that have at least clicked play once to listen to our show? That's insane to me. But that's how we did it. You know, we use social media. I do think, you know, it's always hard to do this. And I'm sure you'll do this with me as well. Like asking the guests to share the podcast is a really good way if they're willing to do it. But quite often, and I found this with my guests too, once they do the interview and they're done with the interview, that's kind of goodbye for them. Like to promote it is an extra level of agreement, if you will. Yeah. And I would say I'm probably successful 50% of the time when I get people to share it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I get a little down about that. I'm like, hey, man, if you just share it to your million following audience, maybe more people would listen. But, you know, I remember that this is ministry. And if I try to keep controlling things, it's going to fall apart. So I just try to trust God, you know, because I really believe our audience can still grow exponentially if people just knew about us.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you find out? Mm-hmm. And how do you cut through all of the noise and all of the other podcasts that exist? You know, I have probably 15 podcasts that are just rotating on my phone, and I don't listen to them all every day because I don't have the time necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing, okay, maybe some people don't have the time to listen to all of our shows every day. You know, we're releasing 3 new podcasts a week, and that's a lot. So maybe they just don't have the time, but I don't know, man. It's just a lot of that. And then, you know, over the years, you just accumulate, and it's 7 years later. And now hopefully we're kind of like one of those shows that we know is out there and exists. Hopefully we can get more people to listen though.
Yeah. Discoverability is one of the hardest parts about podcasting.
Totally. It's also why podcasts, I think, don't last long, Tim, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Because first of all, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do a podcast, you got to be willing to put the work. You got to be willing to be in this for the long haul. And then if nobody's listening or a lot of people aren't listening, maybe you have 100 downloads an episode. That's a lot, by the way, in today's podcast world. If you can get that, you sustain that. But I think a lot of people see that like, oh, this is a lot of work. Not a lot of people are listening. I'm out. And that's what causes a lot of shows to go away pretty quickly.
Podcasting takes a lot of time, effort, and to be honest, a lot of Googling. What if you could ask like-minded people how to overcome the challenges you're facing starting a podcast, growing a podcast, or producing multiple podcasts? I think starting a community like that would be super valuable, but I want to know what you think. Would you be interested in being part of a community of ministry leaders using podcasts to amplify their mission and grow their ministry? If so, let me know by filling out the interest form using the link in the show notes. You just mentioned that you now have 3 interviews a week and then you have a devotional. So there's 4 episodes every week. That's not how it started. So I would love to hear what's been that evolution over time and gotten you to the point that you are doing 3 episodes a week and the value in doing that.
I love this question because I think about this all the time. The first part of Sports Spectrum's podcast was 1 episode a week. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. It will do 1. That was kind of the sweet spot. That's 4 episodes a month. And I kind of just chuckle now because if you told me I could do a podcast with 4 episodes a month, I feel like I could do it in my sleep now because that seems like not easy. It's not easy per se, but the production of it's easy for me to put 4 podcasts a month. That would be so simple right now. But I think, so here's what happened. We started doing a lot of interviews with people. I thought we were going to run out of guests, if I'm being honest, Tim. Like I thought from the first 6 months, if we do 1 a week, we have enough built in so we don't have to worry about running out of guests. And then more guests started coming and more guests and athletes and coaches and authors and pastors. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so many people. And I started recording these episodes and I had a backlog that was like 4 or 5 months down the line if we were doing 1 a week. So I increased it to 2 a week. And this was, I don't know, 6 to 8 months in. And about a year later, I started to think about maybe this could be a daily show in the vein of a sports radio show. So with all the ambition possible in late 2018, I think we went to 5 shows a week. Now, what I started doing was I would do part 1 and part 2 of podcasts. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's ways to figure it out to break up the content. But we did 5, and I think that became almost oversaturated. Like it was just too much. And I realized that people don't listen to podcasts in the same way they watch a TV show or listen to a radio show every day. At least I don't think they do. Some may do that. I don't do it that way. So we kind of pulled back a little bit to 3 a week. And I said, 3 feels like a sweet spot. This was probably 2019, mid-2019, somewhere in there. I said, let's just do 3 a week. We'll do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And we'll leave it at that. And that's kind of where we've landed now. Now, we've done some iterations of a 4th bonus episode on Saturdays. Initially, we were doing something called the Sports Spectrum Minute, where I would just take 3 minutes of a conversation or 5 minutes of a previous conversation and share it. Because we had had so much content that in 2021, I said, you know, we have 4 years of interviews. Let's repurpose those. Now, I could have brought the entire conversation back, which I've done in a few of those. But yeah, we just decided to try a few different iterations. But 3 new interviews a week feels right. That's about 12 episodes a month. It's still a lot of work. It requires a lot of planning and looking ahead. I have a calendar to my left here, and I look at that calendar right now, and I see interviews that are pretty much scheduled 3 months out. So we're in April here. Yeah. I have the schedule basically built out to the first week of July with names for the most part on every single day of the podcast release. Now there's 1, 2, 3, 4 openings. That gives me some bandwidth to tape some new interviews and record them mm-hmm. and slot them in there. But a lot of it is planning ahead. Otherwise, there's no way that I could come in on a Monday, Tim, and say, okay, next week, who's going to be our guest Monday, Wednesday, Friday? First of all, that's too much work to put on anybody's plate. But second of all, I would drive myself insane. The anxiety. Mm-hmm. I used to work on Outside the Lines at ESPN, and we would come in every day with a blank slate, Monday through Friday. And they'd say, okay, Jason, here's our meeting. Here's the guests we want. Go get those guests. This was at 9 a.m. The show was on it and taping at 3 o'clock. So I have 5 to 6 hours to get 2 to 3 guests, get them to a studio, and get them ready to record. I had so much anxiety because I told people I can never promise you that they're going to say yes. I can promise you that I will ask them.
Yeah.
And if they say yes, great. So I remember that anxiety of going up to deadlines and really turning things around so quickly. And I just don't want to ever go back there if I don't have to. So it's a lot of planning with where we are now. We just recently, you mentioned, launched a Saturday Sports Spectrum weekly devotional. Mm-hmm. And we're partnering with our friends at Unpacking It Ministries, my friend Bryce Johnson, and he does these devotionals and we run them on Saturdays. And we just started that a couple weeks ago. And so far, so good. I feel like that's a nice change of pace from Monday, Wednesday, Friday interviews is to just have someone kind of give you a 2 to 3 minute audio devotional. Mm. And once a week, some scripture in there, it relates to the world of sports. And so far, we're pretty happy with that.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you're recording about a dozen interviews.
I know, it just sounds crazy when you hear it right, out loud.
It's nuts. Every month. And I know, like, I have a biweekly podcast that I have guests on. And so I'm booking far fewer guests than you are. And I know how much work it goes into just that. So sure. I'd love to hear a little bit of your workflow. How do you go about booking so many people every month?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of it is preparing and planning and knowing that you have time. So like if I'm booking a guest right now for this week or next week, and the next couple of weeks are booked, but let's just say it's a guest today that says, hey, I want to be on your show and I'm interested and I want to have them on.
Yeah.
I'm booking that guest about 4 weeks from today to record the interview, knowing that it's then probably not going to air another month or two after that. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of planning in place. I will say finding guests still has become my biggest pain point. Like, who are we going to talk to? Mm-hmm. How am I going to get them to say yes? Who's connecting? I've become more comfortable asking other guests that have been on our show and people that I have friendships with, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah.
Is there anybody in your circle or is there anybody that you can think of that would be a great guest on this show that we haven't talked to? You know, and sometimes I'll even say I'm looking for someone from the world of softball or someone from the world of volleyball, something different than just your baseball, football, basketball. I'm looking for a female voice. I'm thinking about a broadcaster here instead of a coach. And then, you know, I'll peruse the internet as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly social media. I've made a lot of requests and booked a lot of guests through Twitter and through Instagram and reaching out. We just talked to a fairly popular young college basketball player in the women's division on Instagram. And I just said, hey, love how open you are about Jesus. Would you want to share a little bit more about that testimony on Sports Spectrum? And she said, yes. So now I have to follow back up and say, hey, when can we record and see if that person is really interested in coming on? So it's just staying persistent with those. You know, I know that I'm going to be at a couple of events over the next few weeks and I'll have opportunities to record a few podcasts at these events. So I'll bring my microphone with me and ultimately those will run somewhere over the next 2-3 months as well. And what's interesting is like Super Bowl is just a different animal. So we'll go out Super Bowl week. Yeah. We'll just record interviews and we will turn those things around within minutes to hours, if possible, sometimes days for sure.
Yeah.
And so everything's turned around really quickly that week. But then most of our interviews are recorded about a month to 2 months before they ever air. Every so often I'll record one. I'll understand that it's important to turn that around quickly and get it out there. And I have the ability, just like you do, I'm sure, to turn things around and get them out that day if I had to. But having the notion of being able to, you know, book in advance, I think helps. And yeah, I'll just use every possible avenue and platform I can to connect with people. I mean, there's been people who've turned us down or people that have just said, yeah, you know, not really interested, or people that I haven't been able to get in touch with yet. Like Tim Tebow Haven't been able to get Tim on the show yet, and he feels like the most obvious guest that I would ever have on Sports Spectrum, and still we haven't had him on yet. So Tim, if you're watching to this Tim and this podcast, you know, reach out, man. We've been wanting to talk to you for 7 years now. So there's a few guys like that, but otherwise, we've been very fortunate with the relationships that we have and the connections that we've been able to build.
Yeah, so how do you keep track of who have you reached out to? Who said, yeah, I'm interested, but you haven't scheduled yet? What do you use as your way to keep track of all of that?
Yeah, I go back to, I'm old school, Tim. I mean, I literally have a notebook that has ideas written on the cover and I just write stuff down in it. And then I use my calendar on my phone.
Okay.
And I mean, that thing, I'd be lost without that thing because I put everything in it. I put Jason getting a haircut, 9 o'clock. You know, I put that in there. I put, don't forget to pray and read your Bible. Like I put everything in there. And obviously my schedule in the interviews that we do, all of that goes on my calendar as well. But even today I have, I think in a couple hours, I have a notification that's going to come my way. It's going to say, hey, reach out to this guy, an NFL player, and follow up because he wants to come on the show. Now it's just time to schedule the interview.
Yeah.
So I put everything in there and that's really helped me stay connected. I will say I had gotten two numbers of two pretty prominent people in sports, and they both agreed to let that person who gave me the number give me their number to reach out to do an interview. And then I followed up and they haven't responded, which is quite often the case in the world of sports. I don't know why athletes and coaches don't respond promptly, but that happens and it just requires, you know, some follow-up. Yep. And honestly, Tim, I didn't mention this earlier, but for 9 years, I booked guests at ESPN. Mm-hmm. So booking is not hard for me. Finding who we want to talk to and getting the connection to them is the hardest part. But once you talk to them, I'm not afraid to follow up. I'm not even afraid to say no, which I've had happen sometimes where people are like, can I be on your show? I always find really weird when somebody like pushes themselves as a guest on somebody else's show. Like that's just, I don't know. There's not a lot of humility in that personally, unless they were to say something like it was a big athlete and they were like, man, I love your show. If you ever, you know, want me to share my story, love to come on. If not, no worries. But there are people like I've had a lot of authors who will say, hey, could I be a guest on your show? And I'm like, sorry, it's just not a fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that goes back to my ESPN days on being able to say no and not feeling guilty about it. And it's nothing personal. It's never anything personal. Yeah. It's just, I got to do what's best for what I think is what this audience wants to hear when they tune into the show.
Yeah. So before we go to the high pass segment, I got one more question for you. And that's, you mentioned you've got the magazine, you've got the website, you got the podcast. How have those all played together? You know, as you're the director of media and you oversee all of those media channels, what role does each channel play and how do those play into the content strategy for Sports Spectrum?
Yeah. So they're all separate, but they're all married together. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, if I do an interview on the podcast, there's a good chance content from that podcast is going to end up in our magazine, on our website, on social media. So it's kind of this pyramid that filters down from the podcast being the first interview conversation that we have. In fact, when I tell some of the reporters that we hire and writers for the magazine that if they do any interviews on their own to record them like a podcast so that we have the opportunity to run them on the show, even if I'm not hosting and somebody else wants to do them, I'm okay with that. That's completely fine with me. So we try to do every interview like it could potentially be heard as a podcast. Every so often there's, you know, 10-minute conversations that will just be recorded for transcription purposes for the magazine, but we try to do everything that way. You know, the magazine is quarterly. It's four times a year. It's longer form. It's kind of deeper. And we do try to take a different twist. So let's say we did a story on Kirk Cousins, which he was on our cover of our magazine last fall. So it started with us getting the podcast with Kirk Cousins. And that actually was one where Kirk said, hey guys, I love what you're doing on Sports Spectrum. If you ever need an interview, let me know. And we're like, yeah, you're Kirk Cousins, of course. Thanks, Kirk. So we said yes, obviously. So we taped for him for 25 minutes and we knew we had that conversation now to center a magazine story. But in the magazine stories, you need quotes from other people too. So that's where we talked to Kirk's dad and his chaplain, a couple of his teammates. And those interviews weren't necessarily done for the podcast form. They were just done to enhance the story of the magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's how those differentiate, certainly from the podcast perspective. you know, that I mentioned earlier, that our website. So our website's just kind of a robust content machine of all sorts of different things. So it's got every podcast is on the website.
Sure.
So if you want to listen there instead of Apple or Spotify, you can do that. It's free. It's right there. But it also has devotionals. We talked about the Saturday night devotional on the podcast. Well, there's daily devotionals on the website, Monday through Friday. A couple thousand people subscribe to get those devotionals emailed directly to their inbox, which is great. We've had coaches, prominent coaches at high levels, tell us that they're reading our daily devotional on our website and that helps them.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful, right? What a cool thing to hear, a little testimonial. And then, you know, certainly just stories. It's almost like you could call them old school blogs, but they're more than blogs. I'd just say they're kind of curated 4 to 5 paragraph stories that you can read fairly quickly, but tell the story of different people in sports and kind of react off something that they're doing right now.
Yeah.
So the Niners are in the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy has the game of his life in the NFC Championship game. And we had taped interviews with Brock, you know, about 9 months earlier. So we'll write a story Monday morning about Brock Purdy after he wins the NFC Championship. But we'll take quotes from when we talked to him 9 months earlier and incorporate those into the story. So we do these curated sort of stories, usually about 3 to 4 of those a week. And those are very shareable and very much read in different other sports ministries like FCA and Athletes in Action and some of these small Bible studies. We'll use our content, and that's what we want. Like, we want our content to be shared and used throughout, not for anything that we're doing, but for God's glory, right? Yeah. And if they can be a resource to point people to Jesus, that's what we want to see. So everything has its own little space. And then, of course, social media is just all of it.
Yeah.
It's our content. It's other people's content that we're redistributing and sharing. It's athletes and coaches after games reacting and giving God the glory. It's videos that we tape of our interviews that we share. And what's funny is we'll start to see other social media platforms then share our content, which honestly, sometimes you get a little mad, like, hey, just credit us. You know where this came from. But then I smile and say, wow, there's actually people that think our content's worth resharing. That's kind of cool. That's pretty neat. And honestly, if God's getting all the glory, then that's the priority. So,
well, yeah, that's some great work that you're doing. And now I want to transition into the high pass segment where I ignore the lows and talk about some of your favorite things. So these will be kind of a rapid fire list. So what's your favorite sport to play and what's your favorite sport to watch?
I love that you asked this because I have a differentiation on this for sure. Now, I'm 50 years old now, so I don't play a whole lot of sports anymore. But when I was younger, basketball, without a doubt, is my favorite sport to play. I loved playing since I was, I don't know, 10 years old, played in junior high and high school and even a little community college basketball. And then basically from my early 20s, I would play in pickup leagues and church leagues and all sorts of intramural type of scenarios and just loved playing hoops. Probably loved it a little too much. I thought I was in game 7 of the NBA finals every single game. And that's just not a good place to be too often for your psyche if you're that intense over games that really don't matter. But I just loved it. I love playing. I love the competition. I still love it. My body is telling me now, you can't play much anymore, Jason. So I referee and play in these leagues and participate in these leagues that way. But I love basketball. So the sport to watch is football. And that's been the case since I was 6. My favorite sport has always been the NFL. My favorite team has been the Dallas Cowboys since I was 6. I now call them the suffering Dallas Cowboy fans of the world because we haven't won a title in 29 years. But it's still my favorite sport to watch. Every game means so much. And yeah, so football to watch, basketball to play.
Nice. Yeah. So what's been one of your favorite memories so far in your 7 years as host of the Sports Spectrum podcast?
I'll give you a recent one. Okay. And this took place at the Super Bowl this year. So every year since I've been at Sports Spectrum, we've been blessed and fortunate enough to get credentials from the NFL to cover the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal because it just gives us access to people that otherwise we would never have access to. And this year we were, you know, at our, whatever it was, 7th Super Bowl covering for Sports Spectrum. And now we have an actual spot on Radio Row. And, you know, the presence is even a little bit bigger than it was when we were first going. But we went to a media availability on a Tuesday for the 49ers. And there was Brock Purdy. And we camped out for an hour with our microphone and a camera and got the best spot that we could. and we sat there, and Brock comes down and we asked him two questions. We were the first people to ask him a question. Now, there's about 100 media members around Brock at that moment when he comes down. But we had camped out for an hour, got our spot, and we asked him about, you know, scripture that's been blessing him in his life. And then we followed up with prayer and the importance of prayer. Yeah. He answered the questions. It was about a minute 40, almost 2 minutes long, maybe. And we turned it around and we shared it on our social media. And it's reached over 10 million views at this point. It went crazy viral that week. Mm-hmm. And we've had some things hit pretty well on social, but not like that. Yeah. And I understand it was the timing. It was Super Bowl week. Everybody's watching the games. And it was different content. You know, there's a lot of people out there who love Jesus and love sports. And like I said, still have no clue that we exist. And for that little 2 minute clip that we put a lot of work in just to even have a chance to ask those questions, to see that hit 10 million views was very cool. Yeah. And it kind of was like a nice little God wink from the Lord saying, I saw what you guys did. We're going to honor that. And listen, if our thing got 10,000 views, that would have been amazing too. But for it to reach almost 10 million views on all the different platforms is insane to me. It's just insane. And that was a really cool moment. And, you know, a lot went into that. And I'm glad that, you know, myself, but also our team that was with us, our small team of three, worked together to make that happen.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, last question in the Hype Ask segment. What's one of your favorite stories from a listener about how Sports Spectrum Podcast has impacted their life?
Yeah, I've had a few of those. Not a ton, but enough. I think maybe a couple every month that I'll get just nice emails from people saying, you know, thank you for your show. But one of them, at least, that really hit me was when this dad told me that he was listening to the podcast in the car and their kid, who loves sports, was becoming interested in what was being said. And a couple things happened. Apparently that kid has become a fan of Sports Spectrum, but the dad felt that that kind of content was now okay to play with the kids around because it was clean content.
Yeah.
It was also faith-driven content. Yeah. So it's letting them hear about the Brock Purdy's of the world and say, hey, you know that guy that you watch on the Niners? Listen to how he talks. Listen to how this man honors his family, honors his teammates, and even more honors God. And if you're a parent that's trying to raise your kid up to see that God is real and to see that Jesus is the way, but they love sports, like, wow, we can be a little bit of a asset for them to be able to introduce them to Jesus through sports. And so that was one that sticks out because it's been, and I've had a couple of those over the years, but the first one I just kind of opened my eyes a little bit to say, oh yeah, we are a bit of an alternative to the mainstream brands, which may not be thinking about the kiddos when they're putting their content out. Certainly what's tolerated as far as language now is off the charts. And there's even some stuff on there, the commercials, whatever it might be, that aren't so appropriate for kids. And you really have to be mindful as a parent, especially a parent of a young child who may be a believer, to what they're watching. Even the games aren't necessarily the safest bet right now to watch without something coming on that's a little bit off keel. And so we pride ourselves on being sports content that you don't have to worry about with the kids. In fact, we encourage you to listen with your kids and maybe they can take away something too.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, Jason, as we close, what's advice that you find yourself giving to other podcasters from your 25 years of experience in broadcasting and media production?
Well, the first thing I would say is try to stick with it if you can. Mm-hmm. I know I mentioned that earlier, but I say that to young people too. Like, if you start something, see it through for a little bit. And if you're not sure, you can go a full year, or in my case, 7 years. Start with like a season. Our episodes were never meant to be seasonal. It was just meant to be every week or every other week. But start with what you can do. Mm-hmm. Don't start with 5 episodes a week and then be like, yeah, I'm burned out after 2 weeks. Of course you are. So start with maybe doing a season, you know, do 10 episodes of, you know, every week for 10 weeks and just see where that goes. And if it's not meant to be after that, that's okay. You did a full season. That's really cool, but you finished it.
Yeah.
So my advice is to finish it. It's also to start it. And a lot of people are scared to start things. I don't think everybody needs to have a podcast. Let me put that on the record. Not everybody needs a podcast if you have whatever you have, a platform. But if you really are passionate about it, start it. And then do the research. You know, do what I did. Go to YouTube. Watch the tutorials. use the different platforms that are available today that weren't available. It's so much easier, if I'm being 100% honest, to do a podcast today than it was in 2017. So much easier. It's a lot harder to sustain it now because there's so many other podcasts than there were in 2017. And so my advice would be to just start and then, you know, take it seriously. Like, I think a lot of people might start a podcast and think, this is kind of a little side thing and just some fun. I'll interview some people. Like, if you're serious about this, make it the best podcast that you can make it. You know, I say that about all for young people who are doing anything. Like, that's honoring the Lord. Yeah. You know, do it as though you're honoring God and not man. And if you're honoring God, you're going to try and do great work. Like, I think that's really honoring the Lord when you're doing it that way. So try to make it great. Like, don't just kind of do it because you can do it. Do it and do it with excellence. So those are the few things that I would say.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today and share your story with our audience and your journey in the past 7 years with Sports Spectrum Podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome, Tim. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Jason and hearing about his journey from ESPN to coming to faith and then making the leap to pursue sports ministry. I mean, that's quite the story. Jason's advice then at the end from his 25 plus years of experience in broadcasting and media production was great. Start with what you can do. Don't overdo it from the beginning. Do what you can sustain, and then take it seriously and honor God by doing it with excellence. I mean, that's some great advice if you're wanting to start a podcast, and it's a great reminder if you are a podcaster to produce your podcast with excellence. You can listen to Sports Spectrum Podcast with the link in the show notes. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Ministries That Podcast, produced by Sonomorphic. If you enjoyed today's episode, text it to a friend or share it on social media. I'd really appreciate it, and it helps get the word out to more ministries to help them grow and thrive through podcasting. And if you haven't already, follow or subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on the next one, and leave a 5-star review while you're at it. Now, come back in 2 weeks to hear my conversation with Kristen Clark, host of the Collide Kids podcast. Kristen and I are going to talk about how she records high-quality audio for her podcast and why she doesn't use a Blue Yeti, the advantage of breaking her podcast up into seasons, and the value of involving her audience in the kids-only segment at the end of each episode. Well, until next time, keep encouraging your audience as they follow Jesus.